This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For 40 years, leadership of the Palestinian movement resided with Fatah, the largest and most important faction in the PLO, the political home of Yasser Arafat and his successor as president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas. Then upstart Hamas won a surprise electoral victory, and then last week, after months of an uncomfortable coalition government, the rivalry erupted into open warfare. After six bloody days, Hamas dominates Gaza while Fatah holds the West Bank. Many see crisis, some see opportunity, and there is an unending list of questions. Later on in the hour, on the opinion page, Charles Krauthammer wonders what's wrong with a good, strong fence on the border with Mexico. If you have questions about that, you can email us now, talk@npr.org. But first, if you have questions about the suddenly transformed situation in the Middle East, what it means for Palestinians, for Israelis, and for American policy, join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now from his home in Jerusalem is Stephen Erlanger. He's the New York Times Jerusalem Bureau Chief. Hey, Steve.
Hi.
Just in the last hour, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice announced the administration is lifting its economic and political embargo of the Palestinian government. By coincidence, all of this happens as Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert is on his way to Washington for a long-planned visit. You spoke with him in advance of this trip. What is he going to have to say when he gets to the White House? Will Israel also support the Abbas government in the West Bank?
Well, they will. They're looking to make kind of a silk purse out of a sow's ear. I mean, the fact is both countries support Fatah, and they've both tried to undermine Hamas. And they've done it so well that Hamas is now in control of Gaza, which is a big part of the Palestinian territory that Mr. Bush said was going to be a state before he left office. So it's a big problem for them. At the same time, now they have in the West Bank, now that Mr. Abbas has fired the Hamas government, a government they can live with, a government of experts and a few Fatah people who support a two-state solution and who are against violence and who recognize Israel. And all that's very nice, that it is a government that doesn't control a big part of the Palestinian territory. So they have to discuss that, and Mr. Olmert will very much push on Mr. Bush the wisdom of keeping them apart, of not allowing passage between Gaza and the West Bank. He's very, very eager to stop the infection of radical Islam from coming into the West Bank as much as possible. And I think both countries are actually trying to do their best with a very bad situation.
Mm-hmm. Is it believed that the situation is at the moment stable, that Hamas is not ready, or at least not ready yet, to take its challenge to the West Bank?
Well, the Israelis occupy the West Bank, which they don't do in Gaza. So with this Israeli troops around, Hamas has always been rather underground. There are Hamas politicians, but many of them are already in jail, put there by the Israelis without charges. There are Hamas organizations. There are some towns that Hamas won control of in local elections. But in general, Hamas in the West Bank is much weaker than it is in Gaza, and it certainly isn't armed in the way it is in Gaza. It doesn't have militias. It doesn't have a police force. It does have some armed people, but they're underground.
Mm-hmm. And also Mahmoud Abbas, again, the head of Fatah and the head of the Palestinian Authority, says now is the time to resume peace negotiations with Israel. Can Israel negotiate with what is effectively, what, half a government?
Well, it could. There is an idea out there, which is that since Mr. Abbas is the president of all the Palestinians and duly elected, and he is also the head of the PLO, which is the sole negotiating authority for the Palestinians. Hamas keeps saying that, you know, it doesn't want to run Gaza on its own and would like to restore some kind of shared unity government. There's no reason why Israel can't negotiate with Mahmoud Abbas. He's been asking for that for quite a long time. The big question is over what. You could make a case that they could negotiate under the roadmap, which George Bush approved of, which is a kind of schedule for a final peace, a Palestinian state in temporary borders in the West Bank and parts of East Jerusalem, with perhaps Gaza to come later. But Mahmoud Abbas has always objected to that idea. He's always said that he doesn't want to negotiate a partial peace, but only a complete one. And he could do that, but the question is whether Hamas and Gaza would come along.
There's also the question of if U.S. money, European money, flows back towards the Palestinian Authority and Mahmoud Abbas, and also the Israeli money, the tax receipts that they've held. Will he send some of that money to Gaza?
Well, it's a very good question. The Israelis have withheld the money because they didn't want it to go to Hamas, which they and the United States and the European Union have classified as a terrorist organization. About now $562 million, $100 million more has been already given to Mahmoud Abbas. And it could go to this new government, whose reign is really the West Bank. I suspect Fatah would be criticized for that. The European Union has said that it will continue to send salary money to all Palestinians, which includes Gaza. Different aid programs will continue to Gaza, but the relationship right now between Gaza and the rest of the world, certainly between Israel and Gaza and Egypt and Gaza and everyone else, is very unclear, so it's hard to give a very good answer.
Yeah, and the question about Egypt is critical. It controls part of that Gaza border as well as Israel controls the northern part and Egypt the southern part. It's closed down the Rafah crossing into Egypt at the moment. And does anybody know if it's going to take strenuous efforts to close the tunnels that that Hamas has used to smuggle men and arms into Gaza?
Well, Israel has been pressing Egypt to do that for some time, and the Egyptians have made some effort. I mean, but there's a big desert. It's not just Rafah. It's that whole border of Egypt and Gaza. It's a big desert, and it's hard to patrol. The Israelis are quite sure the Egyptians can do more. There's no question there are Egyptian crime families who make a lot of money through these tunnels. I mean, it's not just money and arms that go through them, but, you know, contraband cigarettes, drugs, and all kinds of things, because once they're in Gaza, they bypass Israeli customs taxes, which is exactly what Israel's been withholding from the Palestinians.
Right.
So Egypt could do more. I think it would like to do more. I think what Egypt is really afraid of is a refugee crisis. If it opens up the border with Gaza, it's afraid there are Gazans who are afraid of Hamas who might come into Egypt and create a refugee problem. But in the end, it may be that Rafah becomes more of an entrepot for Gaza, and Gaza, run by Hamas, uses the Israeli crossings less. Again, it's hard to know. The Israelis say that they are eager, in fact, to reopen the crossings and provide fuel oil and let goods in and out of Gaza, but they don't have interlocutors on the Palestinian side because the crossings really were run by Fatah, and most of those Fatah people are either gone or missing. And there is not yet a clear sense of authority on the Gazan side. I think these things can be worked out in the next few days, but they're not worked out yet.
And all of this comes amidst a leadership crisis in Israel. Ehud Olmert, the prime minister, whose popularity ratings are almost in negative territory, yet he bolstered his cabinet. Newly elected head of labor and former prime minister and former general Barak is now in his cabinet. Does this give him a new honeymoon as he comes to Washington?
Well, it does a bit. I'm never sure Olmert was quite as unpopular as all that. There was this line that his popularity was below the margin of error. I think that was never really true, but I think it was hovering around 10 or 12%, which is pretty dire. He's still unpopular, but it's not clear to anyone that there's an easy alternative. And as a good politician, he has a very firm majority in Parliament, and it's really only Parliament that can pull him down. Even Barak, who took the defense job because he was reelected chairman of the Labour Party, which is in coalition with Olmert, Barak, I think, wants to spend a period of time as defense minister to try to rebuff his own credentials. I don't think he's terribly eager to pull the government down, though he's under some pressure to do so. There's a second part of a report that was commissioned by the government looking into the failures of the war in Lebanon and in Israel, of course, last summer. And that second part of the report may come out as late as September or October. If the commission calls on Olmert to resign, he probably will do so, but it may not, and it may feel like a kind of damp squib then. Mm-hmm. So I think Olmert is in reasonably good shape politically, even though he's certainly not popular. It's just no one wants new elections right now, because that would likely bring in Benjamin Netanyahu of Likud, and both Labour and the Kadima party of Olmert want some time to restore their image before a new election.
And very briefly, Steve, we just have a few seconds left. Another question for the new defense minister and his prime minister. What does Israel do in the face of more provocative attacks from Gaza?
Well, it's a very serious question. I mean, if Hamas is wise, and Hamas is not particularly stupid, it will not try to provoke Israel. But Israel still has a choice to make about what it wants to do about Hamas's clearly growing strength inside Gaza. Again, the temptation to try to whack it back is quite real, but there needs to be some kind of provocation first, which Hamas may not want to provide.
Steve Erlanger, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Steve Erlanger, the Jerusalem Bureau Chief of the New York Times, joining us from his home in that city. When we come back, we'll talk more about the dramatic shift in Gaza, what it means for the U.S. and for Palestinians. In a minute, Gaith Al-Omari, former advisor to Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, joins us, along with Robert Malley, a former special assistant for Arab-Israeli affairs. Join us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We'll get to the opinion page segment a little later today. Syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer wonders what would be wrong with a good, strong wall between the U.S. and Mexico. Right now, though, we're talking about the crisis in the Palestinian territories after a week of fighting. Gaza is now dominated by Hamas, while Fatah, with support from many in the West, is in charge in the West Bank. If you have questions about what happens next and how all this affects Palestinians, Israelis, and U.S. policies, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenations. And joining us now is Gaith Al-Omari, a former advisor to Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, currently a fellow at the New America Foundation here in Washington. And also with us, Robert Malley, director of the International Crisis Group's Middle East Program, formerly special assistant for Arab-Israeli affairs in the Clinton administration. Both of them join us from the studios of the BBC here in Washington, D.C. Nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be on.
Thank you.
And Gaith Al-Omari, let me begin with you. Can a house divided long stand?
No, it cannot long stand, for sure. I mean, on the short term, yes. Both Hamas and Gaza will have to consolidate, and Fatah and the West Bank will have to start to build up itself again. But ultimately, if there is no national unity, again, we might get to a point where the whole Palestinian national movement might collapse.
And let me turn to you, Robert Malley. Is this a crisis or an opportunity for the United States?
Oh, I think it's a crisis. I think it's a crisis that we contributed to bring about. Whether it can be turned into an opportunity, I have my doubts, because I think the mindset of the administration remains dividing the Palestinians politically between Hamas and Fatah, and dividing them geographically between the West Bank and Gaza is the way to go. And as Gaith just said, I think that's a recipe for less stability and less of a political process.
Mm-hmm. How damaged, Gaith Al-Omari, right now is Fatah? It's lost all legitimacy, you would think, in Gaza.
It lost all power, for sure. And also, it became very clear that they have not learned from the mistakes of the 2 years before when they lost the elections. They've done nothing to organize themselves. They've done nothing to re-energize their base. Therefore, they've been very weakened. However, this might be an opportunity for them to learn lessons and start rebuilding around more organized principles.
Yet it looks as if there's going to be infusion of cash from the tax receipts the Israelis have held on to the United States and European countries are giving every indication that they will resume aid to Fatah and Mahmoud Abbas. This will give him new resources, yet at the same time, the stain of being supported by the United States and Israel.
And absolutely, if the money that's going to come in is conditional on being only spent in the West Bank to kind of somehow show that one can create a paradise in the West Bank while Gaza starves, if that's the premise, then absolutely this would work against President Abbas. He would be seen as a collaborator. Luckily, knowing the guy, he is very responsible, and probably this money will have to be spent both in Gaza and the West Bank. So at least we will avert a humanitarian crisis, and we will avert a political crisis in terms of Abbas's own standing.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we get some callers in on this conversation. Chuck is calling us. Chuck from San Francisco.
Thanks very much.
Sure.
I'm wondering if, rather than supporting one political group or another, if there's some way that we could have a more constructive engagement by supporting good governance in general and promoting democracy and transparency, rather than any particular, and rather than being seen as interfering in the political process on behalf of one faction or another.
Rob Malley?
I couldn't agree more with the caller. I think every time we've tried to intervene in internal Palestinian politics, it's hurt us. We've ended up hurting those we want to help and helping those we want to hurt. The more we stay away from this and the more we just let, we move on a political process but without choosing favorites, the better off we'll be. Now, I'll remind you that the whole reason the basic law, Palestinian basic law, was changed to try and give more power to the prime minister, which has partly led to the problem we're in today, is because we didn't like Yasser Arafat, so we thought we're going to weaken his position when he's president. Lo and behold, somebody we like and favor, Mahmoud Abbas, is now president, and he doesn't have the power that his predecessor had. So whenever we try to choose favorites, we do ourselves a disfavor.
You said move ahead on the political process. How can you do that without moving ahead with one political group or the other?
Well, ultimately, I think the only way you're going to be able to move forward is when there's a minimal consensus among Palestinians. Sooner or later, the Palestinians are going to have to come back and reach some new power-sharing arrangement because they cannot govern this way, they cannot survive this way as a national movement. When that happens, then I think we're going to have to learn from the mistakes of the past, accept the fact that you now have a national unity government, and move with Abbas to negotiate and tell Hamas, you want to govern? Fine. You got to maintain a ceasefire, and you got to do it strictly, and you got to allow and empower Mahmoud Abbas to negotiate a peace deal with Israel.
And recognize it if he agrees to it.
Accept the agreement. Whether they mouth the words recognition, frankly, at that point, I care less than whether you have a real peace agreement between the two sides.
But Haith al-Omari, at this point, what's the resolution? Are they going to have another election? Is that going to resolve things, or are things going to have to be worked out a little bit more rough and tumble than that?
I think, initially it will have to be a political agreement. If we have a new election right now, the elections will not succeed. There will be incentive for both Hamas and Fatah to make the elections fail. First, we have to have a real agreement between Hamas and Fatah in which we reach an understanding of power sharing, in which Hamas gets integrated in the security sector, and at the same time, Hamas relinquishes some of the gains that it made in the last week. Once we have this basic level of understanding, then we can move to election. But first, it has to be a political understanding.
And this is going to take some time.
It's going to take some time, and it's not going to be straightforward, and it will include a lot of posturing and positioning and lots of pressure on Hamas and Fatah, but ultimately that's the only way forward if we're going to get stability.
Mm. Chuck, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Bryce. Bryce with us from Baton Rouge in Louisiana.
Yeah, I wanted to know, when Mr. Erlanger was on a minute ago, he said Israel needed provocation to go in and take on Hamas. And I think he used the phrase whack 'em back.
Mm-hmm.
Given the bellicose attitude of Hamas and their near hatred of Israel and everything they've said and done in the past, why does Israel need a fresh provocation?
Well, I'm not sure that Israel does need a fresh, perhaps politically, because they've just got a new defense minister and the government there is. But Robert Malley, does Israel need a fresh provocation to go into Gaza? And
I think the equation is as follows. Israel doesn't really have an interest right now in heating things up in Gaza. We know that Hamas could start launching rockets again, which it hasn't done for the last few days. It could make life very difficult for those Israelis who live in proximity of Gaza. So it's not so much that they're looking for the provocation. I think the point is, if there were a Hamas attack that led to a sizable number of Israeli deaths. Israel at that point politically will have no choice but to do something strong in retaliation. I would think that for now both sides have an interest in trying to keep things quiet. Israel, again, because it doesn't want to re-enter Gaza, and Hamas, because its priority is internal right now. Can it show the Palestinian people in Gaza that it could do better than its predecessors in restoring law and order?
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bryce. And here's an email question from Diana via our blog. If Hamas was democratically elected by the Palestinian people, how can President Abbas just form an emergency government without Hamas? What authority does he have to do this other than the fact that the world community supports his actions? What about the Palestinian people, especially those in Gaza? Does his new government have any authority in Gaza or in just the West Bank? Gaithal Omari?
I mean, first of all, I think what happened the last week or last few days is far from being legal on any front. I mean, in the same way that the grounds for dismissing the government and creating a new one might be legally shaky, at the same time when Hamas mounted a coup, that was not terribly legal. Right now we're talking about politics and politics for survival. In terms of authority, right now on the ground from a security perspective, Abbas doesn't have authority in Gaza. However, in terms of paying salaries, in terms of allowing the government to continue providing services, I don't see how Hamas can do that. Ultimately, Abbas, with the funds that he has, will have that ability to manage things in Gaza. At the end, Abbas would need Hamas because they have the security control on the ground. They would need him because he has the access to the international community and to the funds.
Yet, if this, well, we're a long way from a grand solution, but again, if Hamas is integrated into a new government, will, again, the money be cut off, which is raises another issue, but let's get to that when we get to there. Here's an email question from Travis in St. Louis. After Hamas took control of Gaza last week, I saw footage of Hamas fighters raiding Fatah members' homes and offices. These places were well-furnished, if not outright luxurious. My question is this: in terms of representing the needs of the Palestinian people, is Fatah really better than Hamas? How is any aid to Fatah going to be spent? Maybe a third party needs to enter the stage. Are we not making a mistake by supporting the lesser of two evils? Gaithal Al-Omari, let me ask you about that.
Most certainly. The image of corruption is one of the main reasons why Fatah lost the previous elections. Luckily, the new prime minister, Salam Fayyad, is a person who's been well-known as a reformer, has been well-known as someone who is transparent and someone who is efficient. And I think this is going to be his first order of business to move in that direction. So I think, though, ultimately, that's why I keep on going back to the whole issue of we have to get a power-sharing arrangement whereby issues of transparency, but also issues of law and order have to be addressed. No one can be allowed to be corrupt, and at the same time, no one can be allowed to launch coups.
That's going to be difficult given the past history of the PLO.
That will be very difficult, but the alternative is even worse. I think both Hamas and Fatah realize if they don't work together, they might both be faced with the prospect of losing credibility. In the last week, for the first time, people are criticizing Fatah and Hamas. People are calling Hamas a power-hungry organization. And in many ways, last week have shown a little bit of parity between Hamas and Fatah, to the obviously to the detriment of both. So ultimately, as a matter of self-interest, they have to move forward. This is where, actually, to go back to a point that you raised earlier, which is the world, if we as Palestinians start to move in that direction, the world should support us in that one and not try to prevent us again from reaching an internal understanding.
Mm-hmm. Is that also working into this? Hamas came out today and said they are working for the quick release of the BBC journalist Alan Johnston, who's now been held in Gaza by an obscure group for some months, saying they're giving this group a deadline to turn him over. And are they trying to make their image look a little bit better in Gaza as well?
Yes, absolutely. And to be honest, I mean, okay, they're trying to politically use the whole issue of Alan Johnston. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter. As long as he's released, as long as all of these people are released, that's what matters. But yes, their first objective is going to be to try to show that they can maintain law and order. They're trying to do it with Alan Johnston. They're trying to do it in terms of preventing the Qassams. They will try to kind of do some, and today they launched a new initiative to kind of control traffic. So they're going to try to show that they can control law and order. Would that be enough without the ability to provide other services? This remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. And Rob Malley, that turns the question to those in this country and the West in general, saying, look, Hamas now has the responsibilities of running this mini-state it's taken control of. Let's see how they like it.
Well, sure, and I think, as we just heard, if Hamas wants to prove itself able to do what its predecessors could not, releasing Alan Johnston, releasing the Israeli corporal who's been imprisoned for a long time, restoring law and order, stopping the launching of rockets into Israel, those will be the tests that it will have to pass. But in order for that test to be a credible one, It has to feel that it's not being strangulated, that it's not being isolated, and that it's not being marginalized. It's a two-way street, and it's a very hard street to drive in because the international community at this point doesn't see any interest in giving any legitimacy or any success to Hamas, and so Hamas has less of an incentive to show its to try to act in a more productive way as well.
Robert Malley, director of the International Crisis Group's Middle East Program, a former special assistant for President Clinton on Arab-Israeli affairs. Also with us is Gaith Al-Omari, former advisor to Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, currently a fellow at the New America Foundation here in Washington, D.C. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Rachel on the line. Rachel's calling us from Iowa City.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering, there's kind of been some talk that Egypt was, you know, that you mentioned that they were, you know, not closing down the crossing so much, but there's also been rumors that perhaps they've been tacitly supporting Hamas by not closing those.
Mm-hmm. They did close down the Rafah crossing. If I said any different earlier, I'm sorry. I apologize for that. Robert Malley, the role of Egypt in this is going to be critical.
Well, Egypt is in a very difficult situation, awkward one. On the one hand, there's really no love lost between Egypt and Hamas. This is an Islamist organization that has roots in the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the opposition movement in Egypt that the regime most wants to suppress. So they're not particularly happy in seeing an Islamist government emerging in Gaza. On the other hand, they can't go too far in trying to fight it because they risk blowback in Egypt. Hamas has its own allies in Egypt, and Egyptian political opinion will not look upon kindly on Egypt joining others in trying to hurt the Palestinians living in Gaza. So they have to tread that, and they have to balance those two interests very carefully as they go along.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rachel. And let's go now to, this is Bill. Bill calling us also from San Francisco.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to comment about how can the world, and certainly Israel, trust Saudi Arabia, who offered to underwrite a peace agreement in 2002 between the Arabs and the Israelis, and they've recently supposedly arranged peace between Hamas and Fatah. So, you know, what's really with the Saudi Arabians? Are they trustworthy? That's one mm-hmm. comment. The second comment is regarding the third party involved here is Islamic Jihad. You know, there's Hamas, there's Fatah, and then there's Islamic Jihad, who are really going to behave as violently as ever. And I'd like to know how Hamas has any possibility of controlling them.
Well, why don't we split that into two parts? Rob Malley, Saudi Arabia did broker the deal, the last deal that fell apart, I guess, last week between Hamas and Fatah. At this point, where do they stand?
Well, I think they too are in an embarrassed situation because they brokered this deal. Then they did very little, actually, to promote it or to sustain it. But let's come back to it's not a matter of trusting them. They did what most Arabs wanted them to do, what Palestinians wanted them to do, which is to try to see whether you could put an end to this infighting between Hamas and Fatah. And they did, in my view, the right thing. They did the wrong thing in not following through and in not trying to garner the kind of support that would have allowed this government to survive. But again, at some point, the Saudis or somebody else is going to have to step in and help reach some kind of consensus, some kind of power-sharing agreement, because it can't be a peace process mm-hmm. if you have half the Palestinians aligned against the other half. And Israel won't trust it, and the Palestinians will denounce it.
And Gaith Al-Omari, the other part of that, Islamic Jihad, there are many other groups as well, is now Hamas finding itself in the position of running a government, going to seek a monopoly of military power.
Absolutely. I mean, to start with just some background, definitely Hamas is different from these organizations that Hamas has a very wide popular base and they are vying for power. The other organizations are much more one issue, basically, quote-unquote, resistance, violence, terrorism, call it what you wish. The ironic situation is, yes, Hamas finds itself right now in the situation that we as Palestinian Authority in the past have been in. They either have to confront these organizations like Jihad and others, or they would have to pay the political price of Israel reprising against Hamas mm-hmm. targets. In many ways, this is actually a very positive development because it will force Hamas to mature politically and to face the difficulties and complexities of governance, one thing that they managed to avoid for the last few years.
Thanks very much for the call, Bill.
Thank you.
And the situation, I guess, is going to take some time to sort out. We thank our guests for giving us at least a glimpse into some of the questions that we ought to be asking today. Gaith Al-Omari, appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Gaith Al-Omari, former advisor to Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, now here in Washington, D.C., as a fellow at the New America Foundation. And Robert Malley, as always, we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Robert Malley, director of the International Crisis Group's Middle East Program, former special assistant for Arab-Israeli affairs under President Clinton. When we come back, the Talk of the Nation opinion page, Charles Krauthammer argues the first step toward real immigration reform is a real fence between Mexico and the United States. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.